City Radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
Well, thanks, Julian, and welcome along to this week's edition of The Gadget Guide. A couple of special guests with me this evening. We've got Mark Cheverton, who's CTO of Redgate, up on the business park just to the north of city, and also Mark Littlewood. Mark, you run the Cambridge IoT Forum. So today we're going to be talking about the Internet of Things. We've mentioned it a little bit in some of the previous shows, but we've got a couple of the guys here who are really central in some of the Cambridge-based Internet of Things startups and the environment. Mark, tell us a little bit about what the Internet of Things is. What does it mean?
Okay. So I think the Internet of Things for a lot of people is wearable devices, things like Apple Watches. But if we take a step back from that, the Internet of Things is a lot simpler than that. The Internet of Things is a web of connected devices and sensors around the world that are connected together and can start to do intelligent things. That means that companies that are using IoT-enabled technologies, in theory, can change the way that they do business because they can get access to data and information more cheaply and more simply and more easily than they ever could before.
And obviously a lot of the internet has been built on the sort of proliferation of information and also a lot of companies making a lot of money out of having a lot of information and processing a lot of information. Google springs to mind. Presumably this opens up a lot of privacy and similar concerns as we move into sort of more bits of your environment. It's not just, you know, when you traditionally think about your kind of your online presence, it's your very existence, isn't it?
It's actually a matter of life and death. I don't know if you saw, there was an article this week in Wired magazine about a car that someone had hijacked by remote control.
The
Jeep. So it was driving along at 70 miles an hour and somebody hacked it from 10 miles away and drove it off the road. That kind of stuff is probably not very good for the health of people driving those cars. These are not just privacy issues, they're security issues, they are safety issues, there are all sorts of things. And I think we'll see more and more companies, as time goes on, discovering that what they thought was a relatively easy problem becomes quite complex and in some cases literally quite dangerous and life-threatening.
And Mark Cheverton now. We've obviously, Cambridge has a lot of startups, particularly in the technology industry. Is the Internet of Things something that's very big locally, or is it the very large companies like Apple, like Google, who are really making the investments in that space at the moment?
No, I think Cambridge is uniquely positioned for this. So there's a long heritage as producing great hardware. You know, a lot of the consumer computing revolution came out of Cambridge with companies like Sinclair, and that's still the case. Arm's based here. They're a, you know, huge company which has been driving the smartphone revolution with their chips, and we've got many examples of great Cambridge companies. I think the interesting thing in terms of whether it's the big companies or the small companies, I think this is a revolution in terms of how hardware is produced. It's not just about the fact that things are becoming smart and connecting to a network. It's the cost of doing that has become very low. And this was the same kind of effect that we saw with the internet when the cost of running a worldwide business dropped. Then you saw huge amounts of innovation because people in their bedrooms could start an internet startup, people in their garages. And you're seeing the same effect come into the physical world, where as in the past you needed a fabrication plant or, you know, Far East contracts to be able to make anything. Now you're seeing individuals in their houses start up a Kickstarter, design something, get it produced, and be able to ship it out. And so you're seeing a flurrying of innovation, a lot of kind of people trying out lots of things that we never thought could exist.
And is that often, I sort of, when I hear the Internet of Things, I sort of mentally think the Internet of Small Things, these sort of individual temperature sensors or electricity meters, is that Is that by its nature the Internet of Things, or is that that's what we're seeing because of this drop in manufacturing costs, that now you can make something that is just a temperature sensor because it's economical to do so?
I think you can. I mean, the real tipping point for this comes when things start talking to each other. So at the moment, you're seeing a lot of people essentially adding remote controls to stuff. So you see a smartphone app to control your toothbrush. And, you know, well, whilst this is kind of interesting and entertaining, it's not really earth-changing. The real kind of tipping point comes when things start working together. And you're starting to see this a bit, but it relies on interoperability and standards across the industry. But when your car can talk to your phone, can talk to your clothes and your devices, suddenly you start getting a value from the network of those things, which is greater than the sum of the parts. It's a kind of network effect from this.
I guess this is one for both of you. You mentioned standards, but at the same time, you have some of the very large companies, and this is not to single out any of them, but really all of the major players, Google, Apple, Microsoft, tend to want to drag consumers kind of whole scale into their world. So if you use an Android smartphone, you'll be guided towards Google Plus for photos, towards Google Drive, towards Gmail. And exactly the same is true of Apple. Do you think that the Internet of Things will be able to function in that kind of world, or does it need to be something where it's interoperable? In other words, will it work when Apple want you to use Apple Pay with an Apple smartwatch with an Apple iPhone, and Google want you to do the same on their platform? Or is some greater interoperability going to be a kind of prerequisite?
The internet has always been a network of networks, and the interoperability has been the way that information has been transferred between things which are really isolated. I think you will see, in certainly in the home arena, the idea that you're an Apple Home or you're a Google Home. People have, there's a benefit from buying into those ecosystems, but that they're developing those things in such a way that there is interoperability. So I think you'll see an ability to kind of transfer data between those different devices, but you will see consumers get a lot of value from just going with one company for their kind of smart devices.
Yeah. And that there are a lot of organizations that want to talk about standards or impose standards. Quite often when people want to talk about standards, they don't want to talk about standards. They want to sell you the standard that they've come up with. And this is a very standard startup type approach. And it's really a waste of time because ultimately, the winners and the standards will be decided by the companies that are the biggest and the most organized and have the most consumers, which is why, I mean, as Mark alludes to, Mark Cheverton alludes to, Apple and Google have a very great, a very strong position in that respect, because they have so many devices in people's hands and pockets already. A lot of the devices that are being developed and a lot of the consumer devices that might be wearable temperature monitors or heart rate monitors or all sorts of things like that are going to be wiped out, in my view, by devices that actually sit within your single phone, which is an incredibly powerful computer. I mean, they're multiple times more powerful than all the computers that sent people to the moon. And they're just sitting in your pocket, and they're getting more and more devices on them as the days go by.
I think, I mean, in the end, I think we should be less concerned with standards, because these things will emerge through commercial pressures, and we should be more concerned with the data, because it's the data which matters. It's having a standard doesn't really help you, and you've seen this on the internet, where the real pressure is for you to be able to get your data, to be able to export it out of one service and take it to another. And at the moment, people aren't in control of their data. You're buying these devices, say like a Fitbit, but you don't have access. If you want to give that data to someone else to be able to use in another service, that isn't possible at the moment. And I think that's the real thing people should push for, that ownership of their own data, and that is moving that around between services will empower people.
Yeah. And that also brings in privacy issues as well. So a lot of personal devices, fitness trackers and things are transmitting data without any regard for security. And there's a really entertaining project that a guy did. He put various sensors around Hyde Park. I know it's not Cambridge, but bear with us. And they were picking up the Nike Fuel Band data and information. And over a period of weeks, he started to recognize who was running and where they were running, and then he could track them back to where they'd actually been. So he could work out where they live, where they work, what their daily patterns of activity are. So these are things that no one's really thinking about, but will increasingly become a problem. No question.
The worry there is scale, in that, you know, this has always been possible. You set outside a street and you can see where people go, but that kind of data harvesting can then happen at a scale of hundreds of people. So you can, you know, it's a much greater worry.
And I guess this sort of leads to the minority report style thing of you walk into a shopping centre and it says, oh, I see you went for a run last night. Do you need some more, some new running shoes or
but is that a bad thing? I mean,
I said run. I was going to be offering you aspirin, not vitamins there.
I think there is this question of what's acceptable. You know, I think attitudes change. I remember, you know, 10 years ago, people were a lot more concerned about privacy online, and now a lot more information is given out. And, you know, there's a lot people are prepared to give up for convenience in their lives. And, you know, if I'm prepared to give up some privacy so I don't get irrelevant adverts, but I get things which I want to buy. And I think that's a big motivator for people to start to kind of give up some of their personal information for you know, more targeted consumerism, I guess.
This is probably going to be a slightly false question, because I think the answer is going to be a no, but do you see there being a one killer app that suddenly makes the Internet of Things mainstream, or is it just going to kind of creep in without us maybe noticing?
It is already mainstream, that's the thing. It's not, the Internet of Things is an intermediate concept, which at the moment is useful to the industry and is useful to PR, but is in essence something which is going to become invisible. It's the ubiquity of computing. It's that your clothes will be smart, your environment will be smart, and the idea of the Internet of Things will just fade away. And it already has. It's already there. It's the Fitbits, your Apple Watches, it's smart cars that, you know, able to track where they're going and automatically kind of determine your insurance based on your driving. These already exist. People don't think of them as Internet of Things. It's just smart things in their environment.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is there with consumers. It's much more active, and there's a lot more going on in industry and in the business-to-business sector. And if you look at some of the companies in Cambridge that are doing really well, doing IoT things, you've got Arm, but you've then got organisations like Ubisense, which is a publicly listed business, been going 15 years. That is essentially a series of sensors in a factory environment that allow you to work out how tight to screw nuts onto BMWs, and every BMW has different nuts and they have to be tightened to different torques and different tolerances, and you then have a data trail that you can, an audit trail that you can track things back. So that is speeding up and making manufacturing of cars about 0.5%, 1% more efficient, and that becomes a huge saving. You've got companies like IntelliSense, who are doing similar sorts of things in the mining and agricultural industries. Telenza, which is a spin-out of Plextech, which does smart monitoring of streetlights. TTP Group are doing an awful lot of things with smart lighting. And all of these things are not things that you would wander down the street going, hey, I'm part of the Internet of Things and I'm happy about it, but they're having an impact on your lives without you really knowing it.
And we had a thing in the office just the other day, actually, where someone discovered a little sensor sitting underneath one of the desks. I think it was one of the companies that I think you work with, Mark, Permetrics.
Yes, so Permetrics, one of the founders of Permetrics used to work with me, actually, Hermione. And they have developed a really good example of the kind of company that's been able to develop something at a very cheap cost, hardware and software. They are helping you map the heat and the heat flow within offices and within data centers and things like that. And so they are able, and they've done a project with Redgate to go in and map the heat and the temperature to try and solve that age-old intractable office problem of wherever anyone is, they're either too hot or too cold.
My theory is that you shouldn't arrange offices by teams. It should be the people who like it warm in one floor.
The warm people should be at the top of the building, and the cool people should be at the bottom. I would definitely be at the bottom.
Yeah. I noticed that you're sitting on the ground floor. So, Mark Cheverton, if people are interested in this sort of thing, you mentioned earlier on that it's something that the barriers to entry now of developing this sort of thing have absolutely crashed through the floor in the last couple of years, with things like the maker movements and the like. I think you're involved in some events in association with Cambridge Makespace.
Yeah, I think in terms of getting access to this stuff, it's become easier than ever. I mean, you've got things like that have been developed in Cambridge, like the Raspberry Pi, which has enabled people to get very cheap computing to be able to do experiments with hardware. You've got ARM producing the Embed, and more recently the Microbit with the BBC, which is, these things are given out to kids for free now in school, and are enabling you to play with devices and, kind of flashy LEDs and servos and actually kind of build prototypes very, very quickly, which is the key thing. You can try things out. Talk about Permetrics, they 3D printed their little casings and we're able to try out very quick without having to go to all the expense of manufacturing costs, doing things at volume. And I think that's the key thing, is that there are low barriers to entry, and there are a lot of networks and things you can join. Mark runs an IoT conference in Cambridge, which is very, very inclusive. It kind of attracts the big businesses, but also the entrepreneurs and the people who are just getting into this. I run a meetup group which has speakers come and talk from all over the country about IoT, and again, it's a strong network of people trying to do this locally. So I think it's a similar thing, as I say, to the software industry, where there's a strong Cambridge network of people who are helping out. And as you kind of mentioned, the rise of things like maker spaces, hacker spaces, places where you can go, use equipment, get help, have helped no end. There's a startup which came out of the Cambridge Makerspace, which called Simprints, which is developing low-cost fingerprinting technology for identifying people for medical for drugs in Africa, trying to keep track of what they need and what they have taken. And that was prototyped entirely within Makespace. And the people there who are doing that didn't have the skills when they started to build it. They knew what they wanted to build, and they came along and they got the help of loads of people who were knew how to build electronics, knew how to do case design and do all these things, to get them to the point where they then got hundreds of thousands of pounds to actually then commercialize this and take it to Africa and roll it out.
It's a great point. It is a fantastic space. Even if you don't know anything, you can go in there and talk to people, and they're pretty friendly. You use all the machines with some training and some supervision, because some of them are pretty super hardcore, actually. But it's a very welcoming and open space, and a great place to learn about this stuff. But also, we've got things like the Raspberry Pi Jam, which was run over 2-3 days earlier on in the year, and absolutely packed, totally sold out, people coming from right the way across the UK. I sat and had lunch with some people that had driven down from Glasgow and camped.
Wow.
A 10-year-old kid, 8-year-old kid, and mum and dad, really quite impressive to see those kind of things going on, and feel that Cambridge is playing its part in making that kind of stuff happen. And I do think we have all of the ingredients within this cluster of companies and people to be one of the major centres of activity for IoT across the world. There's a lot of attention that goes to places like London at the moment, but actually if you look at how the number of real IoT companies in London doing stuff, it's relatively low. You then look at Cambridge and you have Newell, who were bought by Huawei, which is a big Chinese telecom company, who are building their European IoT Center of Excellence here because they see it's a great place to get the right kind of people on board. You've got Arm, you've got CSR, smaller companies like Telenza and IntelliSense and Ubisense, but you've also then got companies like Amazon moving in. And one of the things that we're being led to believe about what Amazon are doing here are looking at some of the drone technology and drone deliveries. So lots of exciting stuff going on, I think. And we've got a unique combination of experience dealing with hard problems, experience dealing with hard software challenges, embedded software, big data, hardware prototyping, and an entrepreneurial base that sets it really well up, sets it up very well for the future, I think.
So I'll leave on this one, which is if you had to pick one Internet of Things gadget right now that you want as part of your life, that all that is part of your life. They're both staring off into the distance. what would be the one IoT device that you can't live without at the moment?
Ask Mark first. It's too difficult.
I think I've already got mine. It's smartphone. And smartphones are really handy for, I've got small, or not small anymore, but children. So knowing where they are and what they're up to and that kind of thing is fantastic.
So it's not even just about the phone or even the internet browsing, it's all of the other sensors and all of the other data that comes with it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really torn. The one I've wanted to play with for a while is the lighting. I'm waiting for the cost to come down. So you may have heard of the Hue lighting, which, you know, it started off, I think it was about £100 for 3 light bulbs, which even for an early adopter, that's a bit steep. But those things are coming down in price now. I mean, that's the interesting thing. You kind of see this is becoming normal. All light bulbs will be smart in the future. And having that ability to think, actually, my light bulb now is part of the network. It knows about when people are coming and going. It knows what time of day it is and the mood and things. All these things are quite interesting. And then you start wiring them up to data and kind of getting the light to change according to how your football team is doing and things like that. And it's a small thing, but that act of just connecting it to the network makes it a really interesting device to play with. That's on my to-do list, is to get a smart lighting into my house.
Mark Shepperton, CTO Redgate. Mark Littlewood, founder of the Cambridge IoT Forum. Thank you both very much.
Pleasure. That was great.